This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato here at Notre Dame's DiPartolo Performing Arts Center in South Bend, Indiana. Ah, yes. You know, it seems like TV detectives, get it, can collect evidence from anything left at the crime scene, a scrap of paper, even a reflection caught in someone's eye. My next guest looks for clues that might elude even the best primetime investigator. To help piece together a crime scene, she examines the insects found in the area, and it's not your average bug collection. Ann Perez is a forensic entomologist and an instructor at St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer, Indiana. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I guess people, you know, when they watch the crime shows, they're not looking at the insects a lot there, but they're showing up a little bit more on
TV. Yeah,
them,
you
aren't
see
they?
Them every once in a while on TV.
What kind of insects are they looking for? What's going on at the crime scene?
So primarily, I've got two different boxes up here. You've got two groups, two orders that are there, and they're beetles and flies. But mostly what you're going to see people collecting on TV or what you'd be training people to collect are going to be flies. And usually the maggots, right? So a fly goes through its life cycle from an adult fly to laying eggs or maybe even laying live larvae. And those larvae are what are actually eating a corpse, using the corpse as a nutrient source. So that's usually what gets collected. But even so, they go, and once they've gotten enough nutrients from the body, they crawl away from the body and go pupariate. They have this cocoon stage, if you're familiar with, you know, a chrysalis or a cocoon for a butterfly. So they go through this puparial stage and then will go through metamorphosis and come out as an adult fly. So you'll collect them any of those stages, but usually the maggots are what you're going for.
The maggots. So many ways to go with that sentence. But you can tell by the stage they're in how long the body has been there or their time of death?
Yeah. So there are flies that are really good at sensing a body very soon after death. So, and these are flies that a lot of people are familiar with. They're these iridescent green and blue flies that you'll see hanging around your trash. They're really good at eating any kind of decomposing organic matter. Or these flesh flies that look like flies in little pinstripe suits. So within minutes on a good day, and for an insect a good day means, you know, not a lot of rain, not a lot of wind, and pretty warm, on a good day they'll be there in minutes. And so that kind of starts the biological clock. So if I can pick a maggot off of a dead body and I can age that maggot, then I can tell you you've been dead for at least as long as that maggot is old.
Which in the maggot year is what?
So it depends on the species of fly, right? So you've got very species-specific developmental rates. And so for these green, iridescent green flies, you can be a maggot in really warm times for a week. Little bit less than a week.
So if it's still there, you've been dead just a week.
In really, really warm times. If it's cold, you're there longer.
Wow. What about other insects? Do they then come once the maggots are done with you? Is something...
So,
creepy crawlies are coming?
Yeah, so there are hundreds of species that can be found at a dead body throughout decomposition, and there can be hundreds of thousands of individuals on a dead body at any one time. And so the first ones that are there are usually the flesh eaters, the soft tissue eaters. And then after that, you have some things that are really good at eating those maggots. There's like a beetle called a maggot tiger, and it's observed in nature to just eat maggots. So things that eat those maggots, things that can eat the adult flies, and then a little bit later, after all that soft tissue is gone, you've got insects coming in that are better at eating things that are harder to digest, like hide and hair and cartilage, things like that.
What kind of bugs are doing that?
Mostly beetles. Those are the beetles' jobs later on. There's a lot of beetles that eat maggots, and there are a lot of beetles called hide beetles, very creative, that can come in and eat that harder-to-eat stuff.
When did you decide you want to study maggots on dead
bodies? I know,
bodies?
It's a really good question.
You don't wake up some morning and say, you know, I'm tired of this job, I want to go study
so
maggots.
I blame my father.
You blame your father?
I blame my father.
Dad's fault all the time.
Okay. He was kind of an amateur entomologist. He was a scientist, a hydrologist, and loved to collect insects. So I used to collect insects with him. He was also a hunter, and he would bring home, say, the head of whatever he had shot, and he'd stick it in this living fence in between my yard and my next-door neighbor's yard. I say living fence like people know what that is. It's just overgrown.
Yeah.
And so I would go, yeah, kind of like that, yes. And I would go and collect the insects that would be coming to clean off the skull that my dad put there. And so he'd have a clean skull, and I'd have a nice collection of insects that eat dead things. I didn't know at that moment I wanted to be a forensic entomologist, but I knew I loved insects at that time. So I went, I was studying insects in undergrad, and I'm somebody who loves science for science's sake, but I also love applied science. And this was my applied science.
Somebody could pay you to study the things you really love,
yes.
Which are dead Isn't bodies and insects.
Huh? Yeah. Yes.
Wow. So you... Okay. Okay. How do you practice this? I mean... How do you know what it, how do you study it, right? You have to practice your trade.
You do, and it's very hard to get human bodies for this type of research.
I can imagine.
You need accredited facilities, and as all good scientists know, you want a lot of replication, so it's even harder to get them in large numbers. So instead...
You don't create them, do you? No, okay. It's another TV show. Yeah. It's a movie.
So we use pigs as surrogates for human decomposition. They have actually been directly compared to humans and haven't been found to significantly differ in their rate of decomposition, we're talking within certain weight classes, or the insect fauna that are attracted. And so a 50-pound pig does a pretty good job of being a surrogate for the average size male.
Wow. It's another topic with so many paths I could go down that I'm not going to. Now, you also get called in, and this is really fascinating, to investigate cases of neglect.
Yes.
Tell us about that. I'm almost afraid to ask on
that. So there are some flies that are some pretty promiscuous eaters, is what I like to call them. And they won't just come to dead tissue on a dead body, but they'll also come to tissue on a living person. It's called meiosis, so the infestation of tissue on a living person by maggots. And unfortunately, not everyone gets the care that they're supposed to in the homes that they go to. And sometimes these maggots can be developing underneath dentures in people's gums or in bed sores. And so they'll come and they'll bring you a maggot and ask you to age that maggot, and you've been neglected for at least how long that maggot is old. Same principle for determining how long somebody's been dead.
Somebody will give you the maggot?
Yeah. Sometimes they'll call us in to collect, but if we're not there, they'll collect it, and they'll send it to us in the mail.
Wow. So you'll say how long that neglect has been going on.
Yeah. So if I find a maggot in somebody's mouth that is at least 3 days old, it's been at least 3 days since it's been... their dentures have been cleaned.
Is this a common thing? You get called in a lot for this?
It is more common, a couple of cases a year.
Oh. I didn't want to say, speaking of magnets, let's go to the audience, but it was there, so I'm sorry. It's nothing personal. Yes, sir.
I wanted to know how accurate, as far as a time scale error, are you at being able to do that? And a second question, what's the longest dead body you found?
Okay. So the first part of the question is, your job as a forensic entomologist is easier during times that are less removed from death. So if you've been dead not as long, our job is easier. The farther away you go from death, the harder it gets. And usually the wider your range gets, the farther away. Now the oldest dead body that I've come across has been a couple of years, confirmed, has been a couple of years, 2 years.
Can you still learn something from a body that old, that's been around that long?
Yes, you can. So it becomes difficult because I can tell you that you've been dead for at least an amount of time, And then you could have been dead much longer, given other assumptions coming in. And so you can have evidence of multiple colonizations of the body, and that's how you'd get to an extended period of postmortem interval. Now, also with succession, there are insects that come in and persist much later, so you'd be
You would know.
You have lots of beetles that can persist for a long time on bodies.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell if a body's been moved from one place?
That's a good question. Yes. So you've got certain distributions for insects. You've got insects that are southern distribution insects, northern distribution insects. So if you found a body in the north and it had southern insects on it, then you can have some evidence that that body has been moved and you're not at the primary crime scene.
You had a case that involved a body found in a suitcase in a garage.
It was my first that I worked on.
Wow. So yeah. There's a lot of wows in that.
Yeah, there were a lot
of wows. Tell us how you reacted. Clue us in on that one.
So,
the scriptwriters are here, going to take this down.
There are maybe a couple reasons why you'd keep a dead body in a garage. And in this case, it happened.
At least a couple.
It happened to me, yeah. It happened to be that somebody's, that they were taking care of had passed away, and they were collecting Social Security checks from them. Anyway, so you can be brought in to say, how long has this person been dead? So how long has somebody been committing fraud, basically?
The government want a refund?
You come across this as your first case, and it's one of those cases that you come across and you realize how complicated things can get because you have a body that's been put inside a suitcase. That suitcase is a barrier to insect colonization. And then you're in a garage, which is another barrier to insect colonization. And you've got kind of crazy temperatures in a garage. You've got to figure out, because all of this development of insects is temperature dependent, you've got to figure out and model what the temperature is like in that garage compared to ambient temperatures that you might have better access to.
You've had many cases since then, I'm sure. I mean, how do you approach the emotional aspect of seeing all of this decomposition and dead bodies everywhere? Does it affect you personally?
It does. You can't help but be affected by it a little personally, but you try and stay as unbiased as you can when you come across something. And it's all, you get this mix of emotions, because say the first time that you go to an autopsy to collect, you have this mix of emotions of, I'm really excited to get to put into play everything that I've been studying, but then you also feel weird about being excited because it's a morbid situation.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when I talk to people here. It's odd because you're really excited to tell people about it, but you have to be appropriately delicate of those situations.
Not our audience. Our audience doesn't care for the delicate part. They want the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
Just the facts,
you know?
Okay.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking with Ann Perez, a forensic entomologist. Well, you're dealing with bugs and beetles and things like that. They're crawling away from the scene, right? Do you have to go out and get them if they've left the scene?
Yes. You have to kind of see these clues of where they've gone. And you have to try and train. Another thing that I try and do with my colleague, Neil Haskell, he's also at St. Joseph's College of Rensselaer, we try and train cops, a lot of training of or crime scene investigators, on what to look for, what to collect, and especially where to look for things that have crawled away, things that may have been there and then have crawled away. And those are, as soon as that maggot gets enough nutrients and crawls away, it's called a wandering larvae, and it's going away to find a nice, safe place to pupariate. So it's going to kind of crawl around. If it comes across some trash, it comes across the edge of a room, it tries to tuck under carpet. And so you've got to train people to look for those things. And unfortunately, I've had a couple of times from police officers say, I didn't collect anything because there was a bunch of trash and what looked like rat feces. And then you say, oh, man, Well, if you can go back, those rat feces are most likely puparia that have kind of come across trash and stopped. So one thing that we try and do is do a lot of education for people who are going to be out there in the trenches actually doing the collecting.
Speaking of education, Gil Grissom, the main character from CSI Las Vegas, you're shaking your head already,
yeah,
is a forensic entomologist. Does he get it right? Do they get it right on the TV shows?
No.
How bad is it?
It's pretty bad. And I understand why they have to do what they do.
What do they get wrong the most? What's the
So usually maggots are not like sexy enough, I guess. Like they're just these kind of white blobs that are maybe hard to see. So they end up using like mealworm larvae or something like that to place on the body because they're bigger, easier to see, grosser. So they use the wrong insects a lot of the time.
Let me see if I can get one quick question in from the audience before we have to go.
Has there ever been a time when there was a lack of insects that made your job harder?
It's much easier to say something about a case when there are insects there. But a lack of insects can also mean, say, a body wasn't exposed for very long. So you have, say, a body in a suitcase, like we were talking about. If there are no insects on that body when you go to it, you can say it was quite a short period of time between death and when that body was placed in a suitcase.
Watch out for somebody with a shotgun around
yes.
the corner.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of hours, right?
Of hours. It can be minutes, and especially towards oviposition, if the conditions were right, you'd expect oviposition in a couple of hours.
Wow, fascinating, Dr. Perez. Thank you very much. Ann Perez is a forensic entomologist and an instructor at St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer, Indiana.